This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
We have allowed ourselves to become so disconnected and ignorant about something that is as intimate as the food that we eat.
Be prepared to grow your own for victory.
God said, I need somebody strong enough to clear trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to yean lambs and wean pigs and tend the pink foamed pullets, who will stop his mower for an hour to splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. So God made a farmer.
Well, hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Farnbro, joined again by Rachel Jamieson. How are you doing today, Rachel?
Doing pretty good.
All right. You excited to talk about homesteading?
Always. It's my favorite topic.
Yeah, we can talk about it forever, can't we? Well, what's going on at your homestead this week? Anything new?
I am excited to say that outside the mailbox, while we were talking, my U-bar came. I got a text.
Oh, really?
So I'm very excited to have my first broad fork. I've been using a pitchfork for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trying to be thrifty. I finally spent the money on a U-bar.
Yeah, if you got a large garden, those are really nice. You step on them, yes, really pry it up and save your back a little bit and your arms. And yeah, it's a handy piece of equipment for sure.
Yep. Yes. So that's my excitement for this week, besides tomatoes that I'm not sure what to do with.
I'm ready to say, I see you posted some pictures of some tomatoes. So it looks like you're getting a good crop of those now.
Yes. How about you?
I was looking out the window yesterday and it looked like my butternut squash are getting really close to being ready already. And I'm kind of surprised by that. I was like, wow, that's kind of amazing. They're already getting close to being done.
I was surprised that, because we're in zone 5, I have spaghetti squash that looks like it's almost ready.
I think I only have a couple of those out there. They're not looking near as good. I mean, I'm not getting a bunch of them. They look good, the ones I have, but there's only a couple out there. Yeah. Still going crazy with the peppers and the greens and the stuff going to seed and everything else. But other than that, yeah, it's all kind of the same. Those cabbage I was talking about a couple of episodes ago about how it was regrowing back. There's about 5 of them on each cabbage. It's
like the funniest thing. Mini Brussels sprouts.
They're about the size of 2 fists together, probably, you know, nice. they're right now. And there's like 4 or 5 of them growing in a circle around on each set of leaves. It's kind of funny looking. I didn't know how it would.
You're going to have to post a picture of that.
Yeah, I need to go out and take a picture of it. Although they don't look as good as the first heads because I haven't been taking care of them. So I took the row cover off of them. So the old cabbage moths are starting to get to them a little bit. So they're getting some holes in them and stuff. So I don't know how good it's going to be. It was a neat little experiment to see how they would grow back, but I don't know how great they're going to be if the cabbage moths keep on tearing them up, because I haven't really been out there messing with them too much and I didn't cover them back up.
Well, after you said that, I left one of my cabbage and it looks like I might have that started, but not as big as you. I've got a bunch of little tiny leaves starting in a ring around it. We'll see.
Yeah, cool. Well, that'd be neat to see. Yeah, we'll both have to post some pictures, see how that goes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but other than that, I seen a groundhog eating part of my garden yesterday, but he was eating stuff that I didn't care about. So I was like, have at it.
I had yesterday when I was out weeding, I had a half eaten carrot. I'm not sure what ate it. It ate the top off of it.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't eat the core. So it just ate around the orange part around it and left the top of the core.
I really don't mind a little bit of pressure with things eating stuff, as long as I got plenty. You know, when they start decimating your garden, then you got problems. Right. But being an urban homesteader, deer are usually the biggest problem with that. And I just we don't have any that come in where I live. I would be surprised to see it occasionally, but we never have seen it here.
We have a whole herd of them that will come and take your, one year I had the best beets ever. And in one night,
oh, wow,
they came in and they ate all the tops off.
Mm.
And then next night they came in and they ate all the beets.
Yeah, deer can mutilate a garden pretty fast.
Oh, man.
I was surprised. I was sitting there watching that groundhog through the window, and he cleared out half of a raised bed pretty fast. But like I said, it was stuff that there was actually a bunch of weeds growing in there and stuff because I hadn't weeded it. And he was eating a lot of the weeds even, so I didn't really care.
You're like, woohoo!
Yeah, he cleaned it out pretty good, though. He actually ate some other good stuff, but there was some dill in there, and he was eating that. And I was like, boy, he's got pickle breath.
Wow, I can't believe they ate that.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't either, but he was eating everything, so he was having a good time. But yeah, that's what's going on around here. I mean, it's still plugging away, and like I said, a lot of things going to seed. I haven't really got out there and started collecting the seeds too much yet, but I need to really get on that pretty soon.
We have about a month. 5 weeks before our first frost date, typical frost date, September 30th here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, depends. Here at my house, out at our property, it's the 15th of September. So.
Well, that brings us around to our topic, don't it?
Yes, it does.
So, you know, we're going to be wrapping up the old garden beds pretty soon. And what do you do with your garden beds after the harvest? I mean, it's kind of the dilemma we all face when we get to the end of the year. It's like, okay, we picked everything. I got this messy looking garden. What's next? And where do you go with it? You know, and there's some things you definitely want to do to have a better garden next year. Now, you might continue to replant some of your garden beds with just some fall crop, but you may not do that in all your beds. You may go ahead and put some up for the winter. You might want put them to bed, so to speak, put your beds to bed. And so what do you do when you're doing that? Where do you start? When you've harvested everything?
Well, right now I just harvested the last of my potatoes. Well, potatoes in one section. So I'm going to be raking that out. And I actually bought cover crop to put down.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to rain tomorrow. So I'm hoping to go out tonight after we're done and put down that cover crop. It's like 105 foot section. I'm going to put down that cover crop and let it come up, and decide what I'm going to do about it.
About cover crops here in a little bit in more detail, but what seeds did you get to plant in there?
I got oats and field peas and buckwheat.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. I'm going to mix the three.
Yeah. Get you some nitrogen fixing in there and get you a lot of just a compostable material, stuff you can break down. Yeah. And yeah, that'll be a good mixture. But you said it in the first part there, you kind of have to clean up the bed. You have to rake it out and clean it up. So yeah, garden bed cleanup is a major part of taking care of those beds. Now there's some things you can do different there. Like you don't necessarily have to clean a garden bed up because you can actually just take that material, cut it up, or just let it lay on the beds, cut it down, cut it off the roots, or even pull some things. I like to cut things off the base as long as they won't grow back. If they're a plant that'll grow back, you know, I like to get it out of the ground. But if it's something that won't grow back, you know, we'll go ahead and just cut it off at the ground level and lay it down. You can do that, but I think you do have to be real careful with some things. I tend to never do that with tomato plants. Because a lot of times they can have a lot of disease issues, blight and things like that. So I want to get rid of those plants, get them away from my garden. But there's other things too. Potatoes, like you mentioned, can have blight issues.
I do not keep my potatoes, or I actually don't keep my squash either.
Mm-hmm.
I have had issues with blight and mildew. So anything that I've had issues with disease, I try to remove, which is kind of sad because you're removing the nutrition that pulled up out of your soil. But
and
I did years ago had blight with my tomatoes, and I didn't grow tomatoes for several years in a row. And then since I've been doing this, I have not had issues with blight. So unfortunately, you sometimes have to do that.
Yeah. Now, if you can get compost piles hot enough, you can still compost those things because it'll kill off any of those problems. But again, you got to be pretty good at doing your compost and making sure you're turning in, making sure you got a good heat out of it. Check those temperatures, make sure they're good and hot, because like I said, you want that to die off. You want to kill that.
Right. And so far I'm a lazy composter. So
yeah,
I don't tend to do that very good.
I had a bed full of lettuce and it went through three cuttings, you know, and I just finally went through there and just cut everything down, just left it lay. I just piled what was left up.
Right.
Because it isn't a crop you have a lot of issues with. So I just piled it up and that stuff will break down, and that's going to break down really quick. Those leaves are pretty thin. They'll break down pretty fast. And it'll be a nice, put a little bit of nutrients and material back into the soil and really help it out. I also find that, and this isn't a necessity, but if I have a serious pest infestation, I might want to clean that bed up a little bit better too, because they can really hide and lay eggs under brush and things like that. It's not something you have to do, because you can just try to create a balance. The way to bring good bugs in is to have bad bugs. But yep. If it gets out of balance and you have too many bad bugs, it can cause you problems for 2 or 3 years, even until that balance kind of works itself out. So, I try to help it out, because I don't want to wait that long for things to balance out sometimes.
Right. Yeah. We definitely want to keep that diversity going. I mean, you don't want to go in and kill everything, because then, like you said, you're killing off the food. I tend to keep crops like it's a small woodchipper leaf shredder. Mm-hmm. We get lots of leaves here. So we'll actually run like sunflower stalks, corn stalks.
Yep.
We'll run it through that just to help it break down, and we'll put them right back on the beds.
Yep. I'll do that with just leaves. We have the leaf hopper on the on our wood chipper, and you guys drop the leaves right in there, shreds them up a little bit, then chop them maybe a quarter of the size or something, it'll help them break down a lot faster. But those are good ideas. And we can talk about that a little bit more when we get to actually
cover. And have you ever, since we don't have anywhere to put things, you have your extra lot now, and I don't have compost going on here. I've been kind of lazy. Our garden's small enough that I still was just buying good compost from a local company that makes very good compost. But what we have done before was we've let those plants dry and then we've burned them in our fire pit instead of, because we don't have anywhere to put them, and our garbage doesn't like if you put organic material in it.
Yeah.
And then we have used the wood ashes before in parts of the garden. Of course, we test to make sure we're not overdoing it.
Well, that can definitely alter your pH on your soil by adding ash to the which you might want to do in certain places for certain things. Absolutely, but something good to test for sure. So I mean, that's something you got to, when you're adding things to your soil. But like I said, clean up. Some people don't clean up; they just cut it down, let it lay there. Some people like to clean them up completely. I think it just depends. It really just depends on what you're trying to accomplish and what your needs are. If you have, soil doesn't like to be bare; it's going to grow something there unless you cover it with something. And we'll talk about some other methods of covering it with. But yeah, you can just cover it with plants, or you can take that material and take it to your compost bin, get the heat going, really break it down, create a lot of compost. But you not having a compost bin. Yeah. I mean, doing it right there might even be a good option. Now, before you even maybe start piling things on there, it is nice to know what you have, your situation. So soil testing is important. It's a good time to test your soil so you can start making adjustments now for the next year.
Right. So,
in things like the nutrient deficiencies that it might have, or the pH being adjusted, you can add things to your soil that will definitely balance that out and get everything fixed you need. pH is pretty easy, and it's easy to test. You can get test kits online. They're not real expensive.
And I put in the show notes, you can get an actual meter.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do it over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah. Those I like. They do work. I've got one. Yes. They're flimsy though. The only thing I don't like about them is how well they're made. They work, but you got to kind of be careful, and you got to use them according to the instructions too, because they can be off, but if you use them right and everything's working right and you're careful with it, they work. They're not built well. I haven't found one yet that's built. They're real cheap.
No, they aren't.
The metal's real thin.
But they do help if you have to do it in multiple locations. Like you have specific things like blueberries or several different garden beds where you would have to use lots and lots of tests. It does help a little bit save the pocketbook if you read the instructions and do it. Yeah. Yep,
absolutely.
They need to send those out in a container so they're easier to
like a little
box.
I don't know because I haven't tried this yet, but I've heard a couple people. I actually read in the reviews when I was looking at one time, and some people said that they took some because theirs wasn't picking up real well, and they actually like took some sandpaper and sanded down those probes a little bit, and they actually read better. And I'm not saying do that. I'm just saying I read that in the reviews, and then they worked.
Interesting.
They couldn't get them to work real accurate, and then they did that, and then it worked. I don't know, but I thought that was kind of interesting too.
So I was thinking maybe this is going to be a totally different podcast. But I was actually, when you were talking about reasons to clean up the soil, I have read that exposing the soil does help remediate if you find something in there that you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a pesticide or something like that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Killing it and exposing it to the air actually does help that.
Air and the sunlight probably. Yeah, would definitely.
Yeah, it helps it go away quicker.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So, I mean, there'll be reasons that you may or may not want to cover your garden. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Exactly.
And there may be reasons you don't want to put, you know, compost on there right away. You might want to wait till spring to do that if you're trying to accomplish something else. Because there's a lot of things you can do. You might want to just try to get some amendments on that. There's two books right here that I was wanting to, anybody watching the video can see these books, but this one is an excellent book. This is called The Living Soil Handbook by Jesse Frost. This one is something I think every gardener should probably have on their shelf. This is a really good one. Now, here's another one. This one's good. It's different. It's really super technical. So if anybody was wanting to take to a whole nother level, this one's called The Intelligent Gardener by Steve Solomon. And it's good, but it's super technical. Like he gets
that one. The Intelligent Gardener is the one that my mentor actually suggested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good book. I like it, but it gets into stuff that I don't personally think every gardener needs to know. Really, no, honestly,
only if you really enjoy that.
Well,
right?
Enjoy it. Or say you kept trying to amend your soil and things just weren't working. Stuff still wasn't growing.
Right.
That book goes to a whole nother level. Like there's an actual amendment mix that he has in there that will basically fix anything. I mean, he has in there. I forget what he calls it in there, but it's his own little mixy, but it's years of working things out by adding multiple things to this mix and then spreading it on a garden fixes pretty much any deficiency. But like I said, I don't think it's necessary in most cases.
No, it's not.
But this book right here, this is a market gardener. He's having to constantly keep that soil, you know, doing well. And it's a really, really good book.
Yeah. I mean, when you are, that's also a good point too. I mean, if you're just growing your one garden crop a year, like a lot of home gardeners will do, just grow their one garden crop, put their beds away for the year.
Yeah.
You can amend one time a year and you can test one time a year. But when you're doing like a market garden or you have a small space like I do, and you're constantly planting, it's really a lot more important to do those tests because
you're depleting that soil. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, my whole purpose behind growing a garden is for health. I also enjoy it, but I want to get the most out of my plants. I want my plants to have the most vitamins and minerals in them. So
to have nutrient dense food, you need nutrient dense soil for sure.
Right. So it's not just about avoiding problems, it's also about growing really good vegetable quality.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And you know what? There's times when people have gotten that mess where they've tried adding compost and they tried you know, and stuff just isn't growing good. You know, it's like they think they just don't have a green thumb, but it could just be their soil, you know, is so bad that they can't, it's missing things that it needs. And in which case you need to go deeper into to study on that and try to fix that soil. Generally adding compost, adding a lot of, you know, material to your soil like that. Usually that will fix your soil. That will keep enough things in there and keep it healthy enough to where it's doing well. But there are cases where it doesn't. And that's where a soil test comes in really handy. Now you made some suggestions, in the notes here, who you've used them as a, for a soil test, right?
The one I have, Logan Lounge. Little home kit that, that I posted in there. I use that, throughout the summer. I will use that, like if I'm replanting and just things are looking off, but I can't quite tell what's going on. But I do send into Logan Labs. They're actually the same as my extension office here in my Michigan extension office. They cost the same thing, and I've used them, and I just really like them.
And you you also shared, you say growabundant.com. They actually will help you read the results and what to add. Of course,
that costs a little bit more, but they'll give you organic. They'll give you organic amendments. But and in the show notes, I put down they actually have a good overview of all organic amendments. They don't sell them, but they just give you a good overview of different things that fix nitrogen and different things that will help with manganese or you know, whatever your soil shows that it's lacking.
Sure.
It's just interesting to read about all that stuff and understand what it does for your garden.
Yeah. Well, like I said, this is a good time to do it. When you put your beds to bed, it's a good time to fix those things. Cause then they're, it takes a little while for your soil to take up those nutrients and, you know, and things. So doing that in the fall will really give you a nice boost for spring.
Especially when you use like soil amendments, they tend to take a little bit longer than maybe like your pelletized feeds. They tend to be a little bit slower.
Sometimes even just adding it gradually, it can take 2 or 3 years really to get soil.
Well, and some things you want to do that way. Like when you're messing with, when I first was a gardener, we have a lot of oak trees here. So when we moved here, our soil was very acidic. It was just growing moss and no grass, nothing.
There's some blueberries.
Yeah, I should have put in blueberries, but we over amended the soil with lime. Ended up really alkaline. So you know, you just kind of have to be careful because we made that mistake and we swung too far.
Yeah, you can definitely do that. That's why it's better to do a little less and then do it multiple times if you need it. Just keep testing, keep adding if you need it and things like that. So yeah, that's a good point.
Low and steady wins the race ASAP.
That's right. Now you put in here also biochar. We talked about that on a couple episodes ago too, because it's really good for your soil. It does a lot of things for your soil. It helps your soil really absorb those minerals. It helps with the moisture. You know, we talked about that for the drought reasons and stuff. But yeah, I mean, biochar could be something really good to add to your soil as well.
Well, you can add it to your compost. Or you can add it to your soil. I'm going to be doing some experiments with it this next year. But
yeah, I think I will too. Yeah. I think that's something I'm going to look into. Now, I'm a guy who likes to cover my soil. I hate for the soil. I mean, you were talking about there's a reason sometimes to not do that. If you have like things in your soil.
I can't remember. Do you remember a bunch of people accidentally got some soil this year that was
It was actually Jess what's her last name,
is it Sowers?
I believe
one of the ways to remediate that is to till it and let it kind of will help it go away faster, remediates it faster than, you know, leaving it covered. So I would but normally I would never. I really like to have my soil covered.
Yeah.
Especially you spend all of this time and money making your soil beautiful. And that the reason the cover crop is there is it helps it keep that.
Yeah. Well, we look at modern farming and we see these bare fields, you know, and they're just, they completely till them under, they can leave them bare soil and you're just getting a lot of erosion, carrying your topsoil away. You're getting, you know, it's just the sun's beating down on it. Then you get weed issues. Well, they fix the weed issues by spraying it with chemicals to keep the weeds out. But the small gardeners, we don't want to do that. We, even if we could. So, but you know, by keeping it covered, you're helping the health of the soil, obviously, because there's breakdown, there's constant breakdown. If you got mulch or any kind of material like that on there, you were talking about the wood chips. How do you pronounce that? The Ramial wood chips.
Yeah. So apparently in the fall is the best time to put those on after the leaves have fallen though.
And you want to give it, you want to describe what that is exactly?
The ramial are the ends of the wood. So like on an oak tree or a maple tree, it's the tips that are 2.5 inches or smaller.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of your growth hormones are, your enzymes. That's where most of your minerals are. So chipping those and adding those to the top, you don't really want to stir them in. And I put a link in the show notes for that so people can read some of the research.
Yeah, from Dirt Doctor, yeah.
Yeah, that was from Dirt Doctor. The original research was done out of, I think it was in Canada. But you chip those and you put them in, and that gives just tons of nutrition to your soil. And then, of course, keeping your soil covered also leaves room for your all of your little animals that are in the soil, because we're farming the soil too.
Yeah,
you know, we're gardeners, but we're farming the soil. We want all of those little babies, all those microbes and bacteria, and we want all of
and it does contribute to that. When I was reading that article, the first thing I thought of, and I'm reading what they're describing, the branches and stuff, cutting them up, putting them, chipping them up, I'm thinking it's chop and drop. I mean, we do that in food forests. We're chopping up the branch. Yeah. We're cutting off our branches. We're chopping them, dropping them around. And it works exactly the same way. It's those pieces, those little bits of the twigs and the stems.
Those tips, though, that have the most, even with like comfrey, apparently the very ends have more nutrition than like the rest of it.
Yeah. So,
you shouldn't use any of it. But with wood chips, apparently, once you get to the bigger, you have the more carbon, which can deplete your soil.
Well, the thing is with any wood chips or branches or anything like that, if you're not mixing it in the soil, you don't get a lot of, it won't really pull the nitrogen. It just pulls the nitrogen off the very top of it usually. Now if you mix it in though, it can definitely pull the nitrogen out of it and do that. But
if you use solely the ramial wood chips, you just like boost the nutrition greatly. And then of course, with my mentor, Craig, we've been talking about using coppice and pollard trees. Mm-hmm. So you can use the same trees over and over and over again. You do not need to get new trees or bring in wood chips. Although it's very labor intensive though.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my mulberry trees are pretty much for, because I cut them close down to a stump every year.
And those are, perfect for that, because they grow back so easy.
Oh yeah, I can't believe how mine grew 20 feet. I mean, I cut it down to a stump and it's like it grew over 20 feet, I would say.
I know, it's crazy. It's like willow, you cannot get rid of it. It's like once you plant that, it is there.
So I think covering with mulch, covering with leaves, covering with the wood chips, the ramial wood chips is all great idea. I think any kind of things you can put on there, the compost itself can be, you know, you can lay a good layer of that down on your beds, even in the fall. But now you may want to fix some problems in your bed. Say you got a lot of weeds or disease issues maybe that you're wanting to kill. There's a couple things you can do with plastic that can actually benefit in those ways. You can actually cover your beds with either black plastic or clear plastic. They both do something different, but they both can do some pretty cool things for your beds. The black plastic can do something called occultation. And it basically, we talked about it. John Moody and I had talked about it on a podcast we'd done, you know, way back, because he wrote that in his book, Winning the War on Weeds. He talks a little bit about it. And you have that book.
Right,
that's right. Yeah. I actually gave mine away. I had one too. Well, look at you. Yeah.
I know.
I should have hit him up.
And a lot of people use those old tarps. What do you call them? Billboard signs.
You can use tarps. You can use black plastic. And it'll do some pretty cool things. It's similar to solarization, but it's because it's dark plastic, it actually gets hotter than the clear.
Right.
You'd think the clear because the sun's beating through it, but it actually doesn't. It actually absorbs the light and holds it against the ground. So it actually gets a lot hotter. And you want to keep that down for a few weeks, and you can kill the weed seeds. You can actually kill disease in the soil. Sometimes if it's nothing really serious, it can do a lot of good to the soil, and that alone can prepare your bed. There's some people who just put that on, leave it on all winter.
Well, and it's perfect if right now, if somebody's saying, hey, I just moved into this new spot or I want to expand my garden. I mean, it's great to start a new bed too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You'll kill
the grass.
Yeah.
Both will actually can do that.
Right.
Cause even if you do the solarization with clear plastic, what it'll do, it'll actually germinate the seeds and then they grow a little bit and then they die. Right.
Yeah.
They're being cooked basically, but it'll actually germinate them and kind of use them up. So right. That's kind of cool too. And both are really good for no-till gardening. They just both are a little bit different. Like I said, I think if you're trying to kill any kind of disease issues, the occultation, the black plastic would probably be better because it gets hotter. Where if you're just trying to get rid of weed seeds, probably the clear plastic would be a better
solarization. Do you know if anybody's ever used it to get rid of raspberries or blackberries?
No, but
interesting.
I don't know. Those things are so crazy. They'd probably just crawl through the ground, get past the plastic and come up somewhere else. Because
they're horrible.
I've had them shoot up, 8 feet away from where you plant them. So
I haven't tried it. Now, have you tried either one of these?
I've done both. Yeah. I've actually had beds here beside my house. They're raised beds. And actually last year I covered them up with clear plastic. And then the year before, I think I did black plastic. So I've done both on those beds. I haven't done it out in the garden. The one I planted this year out in the big garden, I just tilled that because it was the first time I was ever using that.
Right.
And I was in a hurry to get with it. And ideally I wouldn't have done that. I would have covered it. Killed the soil, killed the weed seeds, killed the grass, went through and put down my cardboard and my, and I would have done like a layer.
Right. Like a lasagna.
A lasagna garden. And I would have done that. I didn't. I was in a bigger hurry than that. And I just went ahead and went for the till. From here on out, it's not going to get tilled ever.
Right. Again. I mean, I don't think till is horrible if you're using it, especially the first time and you're
trying to create a bed. And I think I needed it too, because it was some pretty hard pack soil and it really needed it that first time. I didn't need it. Could have done it without it, but I just wanted to get a garden in right there. So it was quick and easy, to get it done. But those are a couple methods that you can do it and you could even do that for 4 weeks or something, 3 or 4. With the black plastic, you want to keep it down probably a minimum of 4 weeks because you're really trying to build up the heat. The clear plastic will actually probably germinate the seeds within just a few days and then kill it within another few days. So in a couple of weeks, you could probably pull that off.
Right. The black plastic takes a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Which is harder if you're a small gardener.
Yeah. Well, in the fall, though, if you're done with the beds, it's a good time to do it.
An ideal temperature?
I don't know about that. I think
probably talks about that in his book.
Yeah. I think as long as you don't wait till it's cold outside, if you're doing it in fall after you've harvested everything and you're still going to get 80 degree days, in the fall. Well, here, or maybe not where you live.
I was gonna say,
maybe not where you live. Yeah. It might be just above freezing where you live. I don't know.
We got down to 44 degrees last week at night.
Yeah, we actually, I think last night it got down to 50.
Yeah, here, I'm so, like, oh boy, we're already headed there, aren't we?
Yeah, it comes on quick. A little too quick for my taste. I'm not a fan. Not a fan. But there definitely some other things you can do that are, we think about plastic. We think, I don't really like using plastic and stuff, but it has a purpose,
Right.
It has a purpose.
Right. And if you're doing
the dark plastic, you can use something that's reusable, like tarps or whatever.
Right. And if you're using that large, I don't know. If you're doing a large area, you can use those billboards, which you're recycling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here we tend to use plastic till it kind of starts to fall apart. We try to get rid of it before it does that because we don't want the pieces all over. But, there's a time and a place for it, unfortunately.
I might even try a combination of both this year. I actually, the morning glories in the side beds here have taken over. I mean, they're pitiful. I can't keep up with them. I go out there and I pull them and they're just crazy. And I actually thought, man, I ought to try that. I ought to try to kill them with heat. you know, maybe it would, I thought maybe try to do the clear first and then go back over and put dark down and then try to just cook them, you know, try to get them to sprout, die, and then try to heat them up and do it. And just for an experiment, because boy,
I'm trying to remember what I have. I have white, maybe it's the wild violets. For some reason, my brain is not thinking of what it is, but they are spreading everywhere. I cannot get rid of them.
Yeah, the morning glories are just nuts around here. I never planted them. They blew in from somebody else's property. Exactly. They've just taken over though. They're nuts.
I mean, and these are edible. And everyone's like, well, they're edible. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, well, but my whole yard. I mean,
that's how it is here. All the beds. Well, what's funny is I told you about that groundhog. That's mostly what he was eating. He was just eating glory leaves. I'm like, have at it. I'm not gonna do nothing with you. You can have all that you want. I was watching him eat. I was like, I guess they're edible because he's eating them. I don't know.
Fair to him.
Yeah. So yeah, but I mean, those are some things you can definitely do to help a bed out, especially if you got weed issues. I actually went around when I first put this garden out here on the side yard, that bigger garden, it was in the ground directly that I rototilled. I actually, I got my torch out with the propane tank. I got one of them flamethrower torches.
Oh yes, so do
I. And I went around and just cooked and cooked. And then I turned the soil again and I cooked it some more and I just kept going over. I went over three or four times with that torch, just cooking, trying to cook that soil, try to kill any weed seeds, you know?
So have you seen, Justin Rhodes did that with his potato bed. What he did was basically he did the I'm not sure if he did a solarization or occultation. I can't remember which he used, but he covered it. Mm. And then weeds popped up and then he went over it with the torch.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I think a torch, I mean, it's a flamethrower. We have a blast. We kind of fight over that. Like we do the power washer, you know, that torch weeder is a blast.
Well, I'm going to tell you what though, you got to be careful with them. I have a friend just this spring, he burnt his barn down with one.
He sure did.
Yeah. He caught it. He was going around the edge of his barn and it lit his barn on fire.
Oh my.
It burned to the ground.
We've only used it. We have this one area in our walkout basement where there's rocks. And of course the weeds come through there and we'll burn them out of there. But I saw Justin doing it in his potato bed. So he basically got the weeds to pop. He planted the potatoes and then he covered them, of course. And then he covered that with plastic, let the weeds pop up, and then he flamed all the weeds. Nice. And I'm like, that is smart right there. Yeah. I'm going to be trying that next year.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But yeah, there's a lot of things you can try, you know, but it brings us down to what you were talking about earlier, which is cover crops, which is one of my favorite things to do. I like to do cover crops. They can add so much to your soil. You got a good little mixture, a little diversity there that you're planting. You got some, like I said, nitrogen fixing with your peas. You're going to have a lot of material that's going to break down and really help the texture of your soil. Plus the soil life, it's just going to feed that soil web really well.
Yes.
So yeah, I think that having cover crops is a great idea. I did an episode all about cover crops just a few episodes ago. So you want to go listen to that if anybody's got any questions about that, but I'll link up some articles about cover crops or an article I wrote.
I don't think he has it. I actually like this book, but it's more of a reference book, but they have a couple of pages in here on what each of the cover crops does, but it's the Rodell's Organic Gardening.
Yeah. Book. It's good stuff.
It's mostly a reference book. You know, it's kind of got a little bit of everything in there, but it's a really good overall.
Try to break it down. I kind of break it down to three different ones that serve a purpose. You kind of got your legumes.
Yeah.
Your non-legumes and your drillers. Your drillers are non-legumes, but they will help loosen up the soil if you got that. Yes. So you kind of root vegetables.
Like daikon.
And everybody thinks, well, why wouldn't you want to always use legumes? It's always going to add nitrogen. Well, you don't always need that. Sometimes some plants are better just for the foliage and to break down into the soil. Some of it really just feeds your soil. It just helps the texture of your soil and the breakdown.
Right. Where I'm putting this crop, specifically, I don't necessarily need a lot of nitrogen. It's where the chickens used to be. So there's some nitrogen there with the poop, but I do need organic matter because it's kind of sandy.
And then you also have to consider things where you live, because some things will grow. You know, you might need something that's going to grow fast and in a colder climate before winter gets there for the cover crops. And not go to seed. You know, you want to have that delicate balance there. We're down south. There's some stuff that's more heat tolerant. You're going to need something that's going to grow better in those situations. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to consider Yes. You can't just say there's one kind of cover crop that fits all, because it totally depends on your situation.
Right. My buckwheat will die before it goes to seed, which I don't want my buckwheat to go to seed.
No, you don't want any cover crop to go to seed for sure.
But it will die. It will die before it goes to seed, because we will get a frost.
Yeah.
Before.
Yeah. So there's a whole bunch of really good ones out there. And, I think that they're some of the best things you can do. I'll do the hairy vetch here. I've done.
Yeah, I was looking for, so I went to a local place to get these, and they didn't have a great supply. But I was looking for vetch. And
well, I'll tell you what, the best place I've found to get cover crop seeds online is True Leaf Market.
Okay.
True Leaf Market has, I mean, anything you want, and you can buy it in bulk, and it's a really good price compared, because when you're trying to buy in bulk from like a regular seed company, it's so much more expensive. You're getting seed packs, right, or a pound of it or whatever. True Leaf Market sells really, and I actually buy my microgreen seeds from too. They have some really good deals on all those.
I'm gonna have to look that up, because we have our acreage we're planting cover crops on our acreage too, and we have some clay and stuff. And last year, it's a little late now, but last year, the spring, we planted daikon in that clay to try to, like you were saying, with the cover crops, trying to drill it up and break up that soil. And we actually have gone from, in 2 years of doing cover crops, and that's the only thing we've done, we've gone from like clay that you were slipping and sliding on when it got wet to there's actually some grass and stuff growing in there now. So it's working slowly.
Yeah, but again, we want things to kind of work slowly. You want to overdo things. You want it to be a gradual change. It seems to be the best, healthiest thing you can do for your soil is to do a gradual change.
Right.
I'll make sure I drop a link in the show notes to the True Leaf Market, because I think they're, like I said, I like buying seeds from places like Baker Creek and Johnny Seed and things like that.
Right.
But when I'm buying bulk seeds, when I want like cover crops and microgreens, things like that, I go to True Leaf Market, because it's just their business model. It's what they do. So.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, when you do a cover crop, you're doing
a lot.
You're not sowing a little seed packet.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That get really expensive. You're buying a bunch of little seed packets doing it that way.
Right.
So you would definitely want to buy a pound of seed or whatever, you know. But yeah, those are some of the things you can do. It's
so with your cover crop, do you end up chopping and dropping that, or do you end up? Okay. Yeah.
I let it get right there. I mean, I get it before it goes to seed, obviously. And then I just chop it, drop it right there and let it set over winter. And it adds to the soil. Plus it just keeps any kind of weed pressure out. Because if it's covered, weeds can't grow. You know, you got a nice thick layer of that breaking down on there. And I don't cover crop every one of my garden beds every year, because like I said, it can get actually kind of expensive if you were doing too big of an area with all those seeds. But I mean, I'll do three or four of the beds, and then I'll put leaves on another one and have leaf mold break down. And you know, and I just do different things on different beds, and I kind of rotate that around, and just kind of that way you get a little bit of diversity in the rotation of what you're doing to treat those beds every year too. So works really well.
Yeah, I was going to, I don't know if you've heard of this, but my mentor actually doesn't chop and drop his, he crimps them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can lay it down. Yeah, there's people.
But he doesn't have equipment or anything. He just uses a board or whatever.
Yeah.
So I might do some experiments, you know, chop and drop versus, you know, doing that. But
he puts compost over top of it. But here's the thing with that. You can do that with your non-legumes.
Right.
Your legumes, you want to chop those because you want the nitrogen nodules on the roots.
Yes.
You break down into the soil. So you want to just chop those up, and then all that energy goes into the roots and releases those nitrogen nodules off the roots.
Right. Good point.
Yeah. So yeah, that's with your non-legumes, like your buckwheat and stuff would probably.
Yes.
Yeah. Would probably be something you could do.
Well, the buckwheat and the, like your cereal grains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are some good ways. Those are some, I think, great ideas to do with your beds. You just don't want to, I mean, I think the worst thing you can do, unless, like you mentioned earlier, there's problems in your soil, you're trying to let the sun and the air get to it. Under normal circumstances, I think you want to do one or more of these things to your soil. Cover it, protect it, feed it, or at least try to, you know, get it healthy with occultation or occultation or solarization. So there's just some things you can do. pick what's best for you and what you need, for sure.
Yeah. And this is also how you can just hold a bed if you don't want to plant it for a year. If you just want to let it sit for a year, you can, you know, hold a bed that way so it's not losing the good productivity that it had. Because I mean, once in a while, I will rest a bed for various reasons, disease or pests or, you know,
Get a lot of blight or something showing up. You want to just,
well, and I did that for,
So. Yeah. Like you can do, like if you get fire blight, you almost want to let that, like that's the worst kind of blight. And if you get that, you probably want to let that bed or try to cook it. You know, like I said, you can kill it with some black carbs or whatever and try to cook it out of there. But yeah, sometimes it's, we might just cover it up with a black tarp or something and let it set for a year. And really, because that is something that can be, it can be devastating to your garden if it gets out of control and starts spreading around. Your tomatoes, your potatoes and eggplant. And I mean, it can hit a lot of things pretty aggressively. So those are definitely some things you want to consider, the state of your garden when you consider what to do with it in the fall. I'm trying to go to the Homestead Front Porch because there was something I wanted to mention because I told.
I was thinking about growing Mexican sunflowers.
Mexican sunflowers.
Yes, because they have lots of potassium in them.
Oh, and I'm not really familiar with those.
They put out a ton of biomass. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking of growing them specifically for after potatoes. If I grow a lot of potatoes, 1 year I was thinking about growing them afterwards and then, you know, chopping and dropping them for biomass into the soil. But that's just another experiment to mention while you're trying to find your link.
Well, for whatever reason, the Homestead Front Porch is not opening it. Well, here it comes. I think it's just really slow. I don't know what's going on. Well, I was going to mention there is it's the Homesteaders of New England. It has a gathering coming up.
Fun.
I was asked if I would share it on the podcast by Brian over at the Homestead Journey podcast. He got a hold of me today and said, hey, would you mind sharing this? Because he's got a part in it. He's helped putting it together and they're having a gathering up there and I'm looking for the information on it.
I'm going to have to look at that podcast.
I will definitely. He's been on this show. He was on his show. I was actually on his show once too.
Nice.
And he's a great guy. They're putting here it is. It's still trying to open though.
Yeah, it's a lot of work to put into something.
Yeah, it's the New England Fall Gathering. Oh, September 10th and 11th.
Oh, there you go. You found it.
Yeah, well, I see it on their vendor application form here. Yeah, September 10th and 11th at Oak Park in Greenfield, New Hampshire. I think it'll be, we did our episode last week about community, you know.
Yes.
This is an opportunity for those living
in the area
to be involved in community. And I think it's worth going to something like that because you're going to meet other homesteaders in your area who are doing what you're doing. And it just opens up all kinds of doors, you know?
I went to a soil workshop last week and it was fun. It was wonderful to meet people in the community and.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, that's really all I had to share from the front porch, I think, this week. But we'll definitely get the show notes up. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about, Rachel, before we wrap this thing up?
I don't believe so. I mean, we got a bunch of different links that are going to go into the show notes.
A lot of articles, a lot of
equipment, if anybody has topic suggestions or questions, feel free to email Harold or myself.
Our links to, like Rachel's email, there's a, in the show notes at the bottom, there's a little author box for me and her, and your email box is in there. You see a little envelope with your email in it. If you want, someone wanted to email.
At some point, directly. I should probably make a separate email for just this podcast. But
so you don't miss it. You did. Yeah. I thought you did that already.
No, this is just the email that I use for stuff that's not my
house. I have no secret emails. I have one email and everything goes to it.
We have one that we've had for too long and it gets a lot of junk mail. So
yeah, I have like tags that separate everything. So I keep track of it that way, but
yeah. So, if people have questions or they have suggestions of things they'd like to cover, we have some ideas we're kicking around behind the scenes and.
Yep. Got a lot going on and this is a lot of fun. I like talking about this kind of stuff, but I think this is a useful podcast. We're coming up on that time. And people, I got to be starting to think about it. Maybe where you're at, you're not not quite there yet, but I'm starting to think about it. I've got a couple beds I've already cleaned out and I'm already thinking I need to get something on those or filled up with something.
Well, and maybe where you're at, you're heading into spring, but
It could be. Yeah. There's people down in Australia.
Yeah. I mean, here we're starting to think winterizing things and stuff like that. Unfortunately, it happens fast up here in the great white north.
We'll definitely probably be aiming our podcast here for the next couple months in that direction where we're going to start covering things.
Right.
That,
well, and then just things you can do in the winter, you know, all those things, all those things. Right. So I'd rather enjoy four seasons because I get a little bit of a break in the winter to do other things, but
I think it's healthy. I think four seasons are healthy, but I enjoy being able to do things outside year round.
Some of us enjoy, I mean, we've been raised with the snow and the great white north up here. So we have learned to enjoy fires and books.
Well, it isn't like Indiana is, you know, all sunshine, but we get our fair share of winter here. Let me tell you, not quite as much as you, but it definitely, I think we're about equal on all of our seasons here.
One time in the middle of winter, I'm going to have to stand in my garden in my snowsuit and do a live feed.
What you ought to do is, you ought to get like a hoe and act like you're hoeing the garden in snow or something. Say, I just can't wait, you know. Or
if I can find it, I'm quite serious.
The garden?
Quite seriously. Yeah. There's times when we have 5 or 6 feet of snow built up in the yard. So,
We don't get, I mean, it's not impossible for us to get that much snow here, but it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. It's the great white north.
You can have it. You can have it. I'll let you have it.
It does kill the bugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get our share of snow, although nothing like the UP. So when I say Northern Michigan, for everybody's information, I mean, Northern Lower Peninsula. I am not in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
You're still up there where it's a lot of winter, for sure.
Different, 44th parallel.
Different. Yeah, it's definitely different. I mean, you're really the zone difference. We're only like one zone difference, I think, at your.
Yeah. Well, see, Lake Michigan tempers our winters. So we get that residual heat off of Lake Michigan.
Okay.
Yep. But our property is actually inland more. So we're actually even a zone colder. So we're zone 4 there. Yeah. Like and a snow belt. So we get even more snow there.
You like the challenge, huh?
I guess so.
I'd have bought a property a few miles south, probably. So you tried to come.
We had to be able to drive to work.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I think we'll just wrap it up there then. Sound good?
All right.
Yep. All right. Well, we appreciate y'all joining us this week. And until next week, happy homesteading and God bless.
And grow where you're planting.